you want to open your Bible to Psalm 130, I believe it's page 442 in the Pew Bible if you don't have one with you. Yeah, 442 in the Pew Bible. You know, if you all got iPads, it'd be a lot quieter. Just joke. Or some sort of mobile tablet. No, I'm just kidding. It's good to hear the pages turning. Psalm 130. And we'll just wait for the PowerPoint, I guess, to appear. Several years ago, I counseled a youth of about 15. He was a non-Christian friend of a Christian youth whose name was Barney, and he attended the youth group that I led several years ago at Alder Grove Fellowship Baptist Church. And his parents attended our church. Barney's family is Romanian, and they spent most of one summer there. And in that time, Barney asked his friend to meet with me and talk about the faith with me. I can't remember the young man's name, so I'm just going to call him Kevin. Barney and Kevin were really close friends, and Kevin could see that Barney wanted him to so badly become a Christian. So Kevin made a good effort for his friend. But as I met with Kevin, I could see that he wasn't really getting it. He wasn't seeing the relevance, the import of Christianity. So what did I do? I halted the series that we were working on, and I asked him, Kevin, what do you want most in life? Without much hesitation and thought, he replied with clarity in his voice, I want happiness. I want to be happy. And thanks to John Piper's Christian Hedonism, Desiring God and Quest for Joy, I knew just how to answer him. Maybe that's before your time. Some of you know John Piper well. He has a great book called Desiring God, and he has a witnessing track called Quest for Joy. Really good. So, Kevin's answer, though, was telling. People want to be fulfilled. They want to be satisfied and things like that, all of which they believe are going to lead to happiness. And those are important parts of happiness, being fulfilled, being satisfied. And as I talked with Kevin, I could see his interest level perk up when we touched on something that really mattered to him. It mattered very deeply to him. And I also realized that by his answer, as I think about it and I look around and do my best to observe people, they're all pursuing what they really don't have, happiness. You know, sure, there are some moments of happiness, right, where you're happy, you're doing something you like. You're doing something that feels fulfilling at the moment. But most people are desperate for relief from stress and the pain of life. They want to feel good. They want to be genuinely happy. And it's always just out of reach. But there's the other side to the conversation. If you would have asked me before I was a Christian, if I was happy, I might have said something like this to you. Sure, I've got a 60-pounder of whiskey in my hand and I'm going to hang out with my friends tonight. You bet I'm looking forward to this and I'm going to be happy. You could ask me the next morning if I was happy. I probably wouldn't be too happy. I think some people do think they're happy. They just don't realize it. What did C.S. Lewis say? They're so busy making mud pies in a back alley, they don't know what it's like to make a sandcastle on a beautiful beach. And so they really don't have happiness. There's many ways to medicate emptiness, but it never lasts long. And those things we use in pursuit of fun and happiness and fulfillment often get the better of us later. They ruin us. They catch up with us. And it's not hard to see that by far and wide, the world is an unhappy place. Let's turn this on so we can advance here. By far and wide, the world is just not a happy place. Beyond hangovers, there are ravages of war, famine, abuse, mental illness, and a whole host of things that affect people in all sorts of different ways. It makes life very unhappy, and it makes happiness impossible for many people. The reason is simple. The reason is very simple. It is because no one loves God, or there's very few people who do. That's the simple reason for the way the world is in an unhappy state. His original intent was for the world to be a happy place, satisfying and fulfilling, but removing the worship of God from the center of life puts real happiness out of reach. Moreover, real happiness is out of reach. Most don't have it. But is it possible to get back on track with God? And if so, can that be done so that happiness can be restored to the human soul? Yes. But you just can't say, okay, I believe in God now. I prayed the sinner's prayer. Where's my happiness? No, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work like that. What we need is a message like we find in Psalm 130. And so why don't you have a look at that with me here for a moment, for the next few minutes. Psalm 130 shows us the path to genuine and lasting happiness. And I'm going to list three steps. Now, I'm not a big fan of three steps to happiness. Maybe it's phases. Maybe it's three phases of a cycle that you have to go through in your life. Some go through it faster. Some go through it and take much longer. It just depends on a number of things. But I want to give you three points to make for a good Baptist sermon. So where would you begin? What is the first step or the first phase towards happiness? What is that? Well, as far as human responsibility is concerned, the psalmist says this in verses 1 to 4. Read with me. Out of the depths I cry to you, O Lord. O Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to the voice of my pleas for mercy. If you, O Lord, should mark iniquities, O Lord, who could stand? But there is forgiveness with you that you may be feared. The first step toward happiness. And there's some things to note in these four verses. One of them is a sober recognition that you are in deep trouble. And the absence of true joy is a good indicator of that. The psalmist cries out from the depths. The depths, the misery of sin. When one finally stops medicating it and realizing that that doesn't work. And crying out from those depths. Jesus spoke of this in his famous Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who recognize their poverty. They have nothing to offer up to God. And their lives are overcome with sin. Blessed are those who come to terms with their total depravity and poverty and become broken and contrite over it. Isaiah 66:2 says that the one who is broken and contrite and who trembles at my word, that's the one I'm going to be with. That's the one I'm going to listen to. That's the one I'm going to hear. The second thing in these verses, a deeply sad, remorseful cry from the depths of the heart to God. So recognize something of your depths and then a remorseful, deep cry from the heart to God. That he would hear, that he would be attentive, and that he would respond. I met a fellow years ago in front of the House of James, a Christian bookstore in Abbotsford, and he was playing his guitar and singing and doing a really good job of it. And that's why his guitar case is probably filling up with money. Missing a lot of teeth, looked really rough around the edges. Probably not very employable for most people. And so here he is doing his best to make a living. And I went up and asked him, I says, what's your story? He put down his guitar and he just told me, he says, I was a heroin addict. He was a business owner, some sort of a truck driving delivery service. He owned that and ran that, had a number of trucks. And he says, heroin got the better of me to the point where he lost everything. He tried the Christian walk, quote unquote, for a little while. But this drive for heroin was too much in his life. And one day, as he'd been cleaned for just a short amount of time, he's in his bed one night and he says, God, if you don't deliver me, I'm going to get up and go right back. I can't stop. And he had a breaking point at that moment. And God delivered him at that moment and heard his cry from the depths of his heart. He wasn't at the depths enough yet. And he was delivered from that. And he's singing to Jesus and telling his story. I've experienced the same thing with big issues in my own life, even as a Christian. This psalm, maybe phases to happiness, leading, you know, maybe it's a salvation psalm, but it's also a cycle I keep going through in my life. I get down, and I've got to find a way back up. And I keep going through this cycle as often as I need to, until Jesus comes back or I'm done here. I've experienced being delivered by God when you cry out from the depths. If you want to ask me for some examples, I'd be glad to sit down one-to-one and share with you some of my story. And some of you have stories that you need to tell so that others can see how this God does hear and does answer. Recognition of your deep trouble, a deep remorseful cry to God. There's no bargain, there's no agenda, there's no plea for the one crying out. It's totally on God's terms. The third thing, an honest confession of sin, as God calls it, sin. That God has every right to punish it with everlasting wrath. And that if he does not forgive, it's over for you. As the psalmist said, God is a forgiving God. That's what the psalmist tells us. We just have to realize how important and how meaningful that is in light of the truth. The next thing I'd like to mention from these four verses is being awakened to the holiness of God. The brilliance of God's glory being made alive to the fear of the Lord. It's a good thing. It's a gift of grace to behold one so wondrous and so awesome and so great and so good and so beyond words. Read Revelation 4 to 5. It's precious. And it can save and purify the one reaching and groping for God in an idolatrous world. The fear of the Lord is what makes the world right. It's what makes your life right. It's what could make your life right. As Paul says in 2 Corinthians 5, so whether we are at home or away, talking about whether being alive here or with the Lord in his presence, we make it our aim to please him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ so that each one may receive what is due for what he has done in the body, whether good or evil. Therefore, knowing the fear of the Lord, we persuade others. Have you cried out to God, but have heard nothing? Then I don't think you've recognized the depths that you're really in. God doesn't lie. He wouldn't inspire this psalm and then not deliver on it. Sign up for Freedom Session. Be totally honest. See something of the prison that you're in. Begin dealing with it through the gospel, and then let's see if you begin hearing from God. That's my challenge to you. The truth be told, this crying out from the depths to the Lord is about coming down to the wire and what you are, and it's not an easy thing by any stretch to do this. But this is step one. This is phase one. We're not quite at happiness yet. We're getting there. We're clearing the way for that. So what's the second thing we can gain from this psalm? What's the second phase? What's the second step? Where do we go next? read verses 5 to 6 with me. I wait for the Lord. My soul waits, and in his word I hope. My soul waits for the Lord more than watchmen for the morning, more than watchmen for the morning. Crying out from the depths of sin and pain, continuing to cry out, you wait, and you hope, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait upon the Lord. You wait for the Lord. You've lived your life for you, and to this point, now you wait for the Lord. That's going to be a really hard thing to learn. It's going to take some time. And with the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like a day. This is an extremely important point. Our culture has so trained us to want and get things pretty much now. Waiting over time is unthinkable. If it doesn't come in a day or two, maybe a week or two, we're fuming. If the lineup at McDonald's is too long, we get upset. If somebody is in front of us and happens to be daydreaming and they miss the green light, we're mad and we're laying on the horn because we lost 15 seconds and we might have to wait one more light. What about the incident that happened at the Nanaimo Ferry last week? Did you read that in the news? This fellow lives in Surrey. He's on the island. He wants to go home. He